Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike.
Good morning and a
happy Tuesday.
So this is a good episode. I think we're going to enjoy this conversation. The article of today is by none other than the world famous Matthew Roach. Matthew has an amazing, what is it? The Roach's Maxim? Made his own Maxim. So Roach's Maxim is, transform the data as far upstream as necessary and as far upstream as possible and as far downstream as necessary. So that's Matthew Roach's phrase. And he's been in the BI space for a long time. He has written the Adoption and Governance Roadmap with Melissa Coates. And so all of that, those years of knowledge and exercise around BI and BI practices is in Matthew Roach's head. And now what he's doing is he's writing a series of articles and videos around the data culture, which I think is something that we're going to resonate very well with here.
The Roach's Maxim too. I think we need our own maximums because I actually use his maximum in my training on my 5-day training that I do. And I say, oh, there's the concept called Roach's Maximum. It sounds like something that's in a textbook. Like
it does. It does sound like a textbook option.
It's great. Yeah. So,
I mean, I have Michael's Maxim. Maybe that be as lazy as possible whenever you build a data process. So
I have Puglia principles. So
Puglia principles. I like that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Best practices with Seth Bauer. I say.
Yeah. Bauer's building blocks.
Bauer's best practices. So we'll have to think of our own various maxims or phrases that we should use. Actually, mine probably is, if it's not making you money and if it's not saving you money, you shouldn't be building it. That's probably mine right there. That's a pretty good one.
That's it. Well, that was a change one too, yeah. Because it was think like the business, act like IT.
That's another good one.
Joint come up with. In all actuality, the funny thing is when I was growing up, my parents had like white shirts. Like, oh, you remember those white shirts with that like had tapered almost like collars that were different colors and the sleeve things different colors. Like everything was white shirts and he had like almost, but not really. But you had like the slogan words or just all the words on them or whatever. I don't know. Maybe it was just a me thing. Our family was like a Bauer power. That was like on shirts. I remember as a kid.
Yeah. No way.
So maybe that's it. Bauer power, power BI.
Bauer power BI.
Power power. That sounds like something you would get on the power wheels. Like, power wheels. Excellent. So before we jump in today, we have a couple announcement pieces or things that are coming up. So this is actually a recorded episode. So just FYI, this is already a pre-recorded episode. Myself, Tommy, and Seth are at the Microsoft MVP Summit, hanging out with Microsoft and thinking through and learning more things around the Microsoft Power Platform, particularly Fabric and Power BI. So we will be there. So this is going to be just kind of a pre-recorded episode. But that being said, there is another event coming up this month, and it's getting close. You need to get your tickets now before all of them are gone. There is the Microsoft Azure Data Conference. So it's called azuredataconf.com. This is the Microsoft Fabric Conference. It's going to be on March 26th through the 28th. And there are workshops for the 24th and 25th of March, and also on the 29th. Use the code CARLO100 to get $100 off your purchase ticket. Hopefully that works for you. Hopefully the code is still good. That being said, any other openers or things you guys have found interesting over the past week or so, or last couple days?
I don't know, man. I think we're ready to go.
All right, we're gonna jump on into this one. So today, this article, we'll just jump right into the main article today, talking directly from Matthew Roach. And so in this video, it's about a 12-minute video on the website. And so what he does is does a great job of just kind of giving you an introduction to data culture, but then he also wraps it. If you really don't want to watch the entire video for 12 minutes, which is not that long, I think it's actually a pretty good watch for that amount of time. He gives you a couple bullet points or summary key points of what he's going to discuss inside the video. And I think these are the really, the meat and potatoes portion of what he's trying to get out here and what he's trying to talk through. The analogy that I think he's going for here is that there is two worlds to this data engineering space or Power BI and BI in general, right? There's the IT realm of things that are more essentially controlled, and then there's the business side of things. And so I think the analogy here is Matthew is trying to utilize the sword is kind of like your self-service BI, or your, let's just say this, your BI tool. Whether or not it's self-service or not really depends on the culture or the culture you put in place at your company. And I think there's a culture piece here that he's going to allude to in this video, talking about, you know, just because you don't know how to use the sword doesn't mean the two-edged sword is extremely dangerous. You need to learn the tools of the trade and figure out how to best utilize them, because once you utilize them, they can become very effective. So I think that's kind of the analogy he's going for here. Tommy, let's jump in with you, your opinion. What were your initial thoughts? And, you know, where do you think Matthew's going with a lot of this main topic here?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a ton. And I think self-service is becoming more and more paramount in the first part of, I think, an organization's kind of dialogue in terms of adopting data. I think talking about the different eras of BI, we've always been with, okay, centralized BI teams and enterprise and BI. I'm finding more and more, reading about it more and seeing with organizations and clients where they want to jump right into self-service. And they want that to be kind of the almost primary way, obviously still focusing with enterprise, but self-service is becoming more and more of a high topic conversation first off. And I think this is a great article and really a kind of a great concept on this is good. This is good that we're having this conversation. However, we do need to go through things because it can be incredibly powerful, but there's also a lot of gotchas that we need to be careful about.
Or you can get cut really bad.
Get cut, yeah.
Swords. We're talking swords.
Is that your Boston accent?
I don't know. I like swords. Matthew, oh, that's what I'm going to hit him up when we're out there. I want to go swing some swords.
It'll be better than my hammer throwing sequel bits.
Goodness. You should have seen Tommy throw. So it wasn't hammer throwing, because if we were throwing hammers, it wouldn't go very well.
That would be weird.
We were axe throwing at sequel bits. And
well, I was attempting it. I wasn't doing it.
Tommy was good at bouncing them off the wall. we'll say that. He had a good bouncing effect off of the wall. Meanwhile, I was just
might as well been throwing hammers,
killing these axes, and I was like, I don't know what I was doing. I had the right step or something. It just fell off the hand just right, and every single one was like, bam, bam. The guy was like, oh, well, you got it down. I'm like, I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing. Meanwhile, Tommy's like, I'm gonna do one more. Come on, one more. I can get it to stick.
Oh man,
it just will not stick.
The guy was looking at me like, it's not your thing.
It's just not your thing.
That's funny.
So let's talk more about the data culture and the two-edged sword. So Seth, do you perceive it that way? Do you feel like the Power BI, are you getting the analogy here, right? Power BI or BI in general is the sword, and there's two edges. One edge that cuts from the IT side of things, and then one edge that maybe cuts from the business side. And so if you don't know the other side's sharp, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I get it. But at the same time, it's in the context of self-service. And that's where I think you can get cut in trying to like just unleashing everything on a user base that is uneducated about the tooling and or the data. And I think there are like warnings around how you go about implementing Power BI. Is a great self-service tool if utilized in the right way. But that actual implementation could very well easily backfire.
Could we focus on the educated part? Because I think this is a really big kind of aspect when we talk about introducing self-service. We've obviously know that there's going to be some training involved for any user, but how do we know when there's enough training, right? Is a week's worth of training, you've done your workshops and now you're ready to go to self-service? Do you release different things in steps? Because I think this is really where you can get cut. You may know what a sword is or be able to hold one, right? But going to battle or whatever the circumstance is, I don't know if we have a good concept or a good handle on the adequate enough of not just training, but also experience to say, okay, now you're ready, your team is ready to do self-service, if it's that easy.
You made a comment earlier, Tommy, that really resonated with me. You made a comment around, you felt like some organizations aren't really ready to kind of like jump in, and they want self-service, but they're not prepared to, one, maybe support it, or they're not really ready to go. And I think you're right. I feel like I'm feeling the same sentiment. I mean, I've been doing some training classes recently, and so that always refreshes my mind of like where people are in their journey, right? It feels like a lot of times there is pockets of analytics that are using Power BI inside organizations, and there's a little bit of wins or successes coming from those pockets of analytics. And what's coming out of that is a team of people that are like, I need some more training. Now, some people are self-driven and will go to their boss and say, hey, I need to go get some formal training. Where should I go get some? So they go to a school, they go pay for some training, they actually go through a course that will help them get from, you know, getting data into Power BI and utilizing it. So just getting in some good runtime. But it's also hard, I think, from a data culture standpoint, if the company is not going to continue to support that user, things will fall apart. And so I hesitate a little bit when organizations are so ready to jump in with, okay, we're going to just do self-service without any plan. There's no center of excellence. We don't know what we're building. What is our projects? Like, so I feel like there's also some the culture is not there yet. I think the culture needs to support the ability and the capabilities of the training. And then that's maybe one comment that I have about what you said, Tommy. The second part was that resonated with me. You said, maybe we should trickle things out. I really think so. I don't think you come in and say, okay, we're going to self-service. Everyone gets deployment pipelines and GitHub and, or, you know, and DevOps to go do things. I think you start very small with a small group of people and you slowly release features and you start with, you know, a limited set, right? We're not going to give everyone workspaces. We're not going to let you just make whatever you want. Because a lot of times organizations that run this wide open, I've been talking to organizations and they're like, we're going to start doing Power BI. I'm like, great. What do you have? And then I go look at their capacity metrics app and they've got multiple P SKUs laying around the tenant. And then I'm like, what? You've already got Power BI very well established in your company. And they're like, well, we're starting in our department. Like, we're just going to get going. So like, sometimes it's like one hand doesn't talk to the other inside the organization.
Do you think that's an expectation issue? Because I think what I'm finding is we want self-service, but it's like, well, what do you want out of that?
I think what you're speaking to is the buzzword culture. Right. Like, and that's where businesses get themselves in trouble. Like somebody, like all of a sudden, you know, it takes a couple well-known technology magazines or a big push where everybody starts using Power BI. Right. And everybody's doing self-service. Oh, well, that sounds like something we should do. Let's buy Power BI and just turn it on. And we have self-service. That would be in like a way to go get cut. Right?
I would agree with that.
I mean, and to your point, Mike, though, like in terms of the methods by which you can find success in self-service, I think you're speaking to like somebody has to at least have an idea, right? We've got to have a strategic way in which you're going to just open the floodgates to non-data professionals, right? And the vast majority of business people are not data professionals. They work with data a lot, right? Like they may be in Excel and push data around, but that doesn't mean that they're like creating a lot of functions or calculations or like doing analyst work. So while like that's where you really get in trouble, I think, where you just unleash because everybody's just going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to try this thing. One, two, are you even prepped for it from a data source perspective? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have something available to that wide audience that is not going to instantly get them in trouble? Or are you expecting them to just know where everything is and it magically works, right? Versus a slow trickle out, like you're saying, where it's like, okay, well, maybe we engage a few analysts or data people, business data people that are manually doing a lot of things, but they certainly know data. And we engage with them in different business units because I think those are the folks that you're going to find extreme success with right off the bat because some of the prevailing themes that are going to resonate with those users is automation.
Oh, yes.
and connecting to multiple data sources and just combining data in this one tool for analysis, yes, purely from an automation and analysis perspective. And like once you have that hook, you're already driving for efficiencies. They're already primarily the heavy data users within a business unit, and they're going to be ones on a path or a trajectory to get down where I think a much lower percentage of self-service actually lives, which is creating high value reports that are shared throughout the organization.
Be honest, I think there's a bit of an ideal there that I don't know if that's paramount in every organization, large or small, and just some of the things you're talking about. Where, so honestly, the data analyst side, right? Like that every department already has someone dedicated there, which is usually required. No, and I agree with everything you said, like completely that there's that path, but I think it's just not that easy a lot of times because a lot of organizations, they don't have dedicated people who work in data. Maybe they're doing
right.
Yeah. but that's the big point. So how are you going to do self-service? Are they going to have to hire? Because I think usually you're trying to do everything from within. That's kind of the expectation. No.
I mean, yes, but my point there would be, and it's a good call out. It's a good saying like, hey, yeah, in a great world, Seth, trickle down would be fantastic if you had those types of users in every business unit. What happens if you don't?
Right.
You have a lot more prep. Yeah. You have a lot more process. You have a lot more training, I think, to make something successful. Because, like, what are some of the outcomes that you guys would perceive or have seen in really poor self-service implementations?
Well, no, sorry, right? Yeah. Well, it's the idea. It, you know, some of it is your what I see a reaction to some of this. So one poor self-service thing is, there's no plan to how we get data out of our systems. So we're consistently loading the same table from the same server in multiple data sets. So a symptom of what you were asking about there, Seth, is our back-end servers are starting to fall over because we're looking at the queries and like, oh my gosh, at 8 a.m, we get like 30 different queries for this really large fact table that's just getting reloaded in its entirety every single day. Now, we'll, like when you come in and say, I want to produce Power BI, do you think first thing day one, oh, I got a plan for my servers not to fall over? I don't think that's what your thought is initially. And when I see people at least exploring and trying to figure out like, what can Power BI even do? I feel like the general journey is, can I just get some data from Excel? How does that work? Okay, let's go a little bit farther. That works. Let's go find where can we get the data instead from Excel? Can we go back to the original system? Is it an AS400 model from IBM, maybe we go there. And maybe we, and so I think what happens is you start taking these incremental steps. And I think this is why the data culture is so important to me in this conversation, because you need to have open conversations. We need to let the business explore a little bit, but with guardrails, because at some point we're going to need to identify what's being run in our environment, who's running those things, and starting to address the culture that's starting to develop. And so either you let it just happen naturally and it grows within the organization, which at some point you're going to have to clean it up, or you're going to wind up paying more money to not clean it up, and you're just going to keep throwing more piece cues at things to keep it running. So it's kind of a mixed bag here, I feel like.
And I think that's why the expectations are so important too. You're talking about the back end, just on the front end too. There are certain tooling, including Excel, that can do for the consumer things better than Power BI, but not in a whole, like a macro that someone just clicks a button and updates everything. And I think without the expectations, they're like, here's what we had in Excel, duplicate that in Power BI with the same stored procedure and everything I click on, and I get this whole row of tables or whatever that circumstance is. And you're like, well, we can't replicate that in Power BI because, again, the amount of work in the back end to get that up and running in the first place, and every month it, the consumer doesn't care about that. They don't know about how much work every month takes or all the manual labor. So they just know that they click a button and this tooling or this software or in Excel and they get their results. And I think that's the other side of it. Just like our server may fall, we're calling it too much. Consumers are also, if they don't have the right expectations going into what their team's going to be able to do, and as we've said, they may be limited in their tech, in their skilling in Power BI. There's going to be a lot of frustration right off the bat.
I'm resonating with your comment there, Tommy, around there are, and I'm trying to materialize what you're saying into like how I perceive it. Mm-hmm. There's this concept of the Excel file, the scripts, the stored procedures. These are business level rules that someone has worked out and said, data came in like this and data needs to leave like that. Mm-hmm. Someone designed this in those tools because that's what they had access to. They designed it maybe in a vacuum without a lot of other input from other people. But what's happened is the difference here is, well, Power BI comes into this world and we're saying, here is a process that was legacy. And now we're throwing a brand new tool at it. And we don't really know how the new tool works. We think we do. So what do you build out of that? Like, and this is where I think, going back to your point much earlier, is that you need to bring in experts or have people who are spending time learning what this is, building into the data culture of what do we need to understand in order to produce the value from our data.
Right.
So someone's got to go through that Excel file and say, okay, what are the risks of keeping that Excel file around? Are those greater than us migrating to something in Power BI or a Lakehouse or Fabric Pipelines or whatever the thing is? Is there a value there? And someone in the business is going to say, yeah, this is worth our time. We should actually do this. And maybe initially some of those things still live on until it falls apart and breaks. And someone says, okay, the pain of not solving or fixing that solution is now high enough that I need to go build another solution.
Right.
And I find that pain occurs when someone gets a promotion, someone moves on, the tool doesn't work and the data does not load. When those things occur, people throw a fit, and that's enough pain to push people to, maybe we do need a different solution. I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel the same way about that.
No, I'm 1,000% with you, because you just said everything that happens too when you're releasing people or processes too quickly. We're saying, hey, we're going to do Power BI. And we want, you know, again, there's a high anticipation for it. There's high excitement for that. Okay, well, get these people on it now. Well, again, these are people that maybe just done a week of training, or they're 2 weeks into it, or they have not seen all the different scenarios, and they're now trying to solve problems that they're not equipped for, right? And maybe they either shouldn't be yet, or that's just really more of an enterprise problem. But here's the idea, especially around Power BI, and I think it's going to be more with Fabric, where it can solve all the data problems. And maybe it can, but doesn't mean you just take your existing solution that was probably broken in the first place or not optimal, and now you're just trying to, you know, put that round peg in the square hole, or whatever the saying is. But I think that's very much what you're saying, is releasing people too far or too quickly out of the gate, and they're expecting to do a lot more than I think what they intended to do or what they thought they were going to do.
I guess maybe another talking point around here. So going back to Matthew Roach's points that he kind of outlined here at the bottom of the article. One thing he pointed out here is, in reality, the two-edged sword is a very versatile tool, and it can be used in a multitude of different ways, ranging from different circumstances and scenarios. I think this is what we're also starting to see now with Power BI in general, because I feel like there's now, you know, we say Power BI, but I feel like I'm finding myself or catching myself qualifying, well, okay, when I say Power BI, I mean semantic model and reports, or I mean the old data flows and the reports side. Like, so I feel like I'm qualifying my comments now, because now there's a whole bunch of other things that I think are valuable, but then now they're bolted into the system. And so I'm like, well, okay, well, we could do data engineering things over here, but really what you want to do is connect these data sources. We really want to get them to the lake as fast as possible. And then we can start talking about, okay, now how do we shape the data, get it ready for semantic models? So I see more conversations being held around the broader scope of spectrum that's happening with all the tools that are in Fabric now. And so, yeah, it's a very versatile tool, but if you don't know how to build the tables, if you don't have process around those things, how well is it going to work for you? And where I'm having some headache here in this conversation is, where do you find the information? Where is the oracle that tells me this is how it should be done. And I think I get a ton of questions in the classes that I do around, hey, what's Fabric? How do I use it? What's the best practice? I'm like, guys, it's just been out. Like, it's just literally launched like in November. No one's had time to build like real solutions on this in environments or in companies that are finding incredible value from this. I think it will get there. I do have some opinions on how I would like to build things based on other solutions I've built outside of Power BI Fabric. But I do feel like there's this, everyone wants the answers right now. And I think the MVPs, the community of experts, haven't really wrapped their head around yet what this looks like. Thoughts, Seth?
I saw Tommy making
he's wiggling in his faces. Chair. He's wiggling in his chair. We can say that.
Description.
So, okay. Here's the thing. We're just trying to tackle Power BI self-service. And you're right, Mike, because all these things are, I'm getting the same questions too around data lakes and Fabric. If we can't even tackle successfully, and I think we're seeing the Wild West, all the problems, or why we're talking about the two-edged sword in Power BI. And again, I'll use your frame of reference here, semantic model reporting,
sure,
data culture. I mean, which is, it can't be just limited to reporting. It's everything.
Yeah.
But we're seeing this as, you need to be really careful how you roll this out or you will get cut, as Seth said. This, and now we're, the idea of trying to then introduce a data lake and then this whole workflow, I don't know yet. I haven't finalized yet in my own head. If do you need to be an expert in Power BI reporting semantic models to then learn the data lake in Fabric? Do you need to come from a Power BI background to then go into Fabric? I don't know yet. However, if we're still struggling, and I think all of us are still struggling with just the introduction of getting a good report out there, forget the semantic model and your DAX, right? It's, I would say, even the concept of getting rolled out from a self-service point of view to consumers where mm-hmm. they are trusting the data. Again, we could talk about data flows, Gen 2 and notebooks. That's all great. But at the end of the day, if people have low expectations and low trust of the reports and the content they're looking at, that's all that's for naught.
If we had a difficult time before Fabric,
right?
And the reason I chuckled is I thought you were actually going to take it a different way, which is, you know, what percentage of people are we actually talking about in self-service scenarios that are going to engage or be able to engage in Fabric without an expert?
That's very true.
Yeah,
and I think that's where I do really like the analogy that Matthew uses, where, you know, there's the true edge or the front edge and then the false, like the back, right? So it, like the correlation between a business intelligence team, BI developers that do know all of the things that Mike Carlo does. I mean, a fraction that Mike knows.
Yeah, I don't really know that much.
They're very, but they're proficient.
Google knows a lot of things. I'll just
they're,
say,
they're just being, not as good, you know, as Mike.
Copilot can tell me a lot of things these days. So,
But there's the technical leadership that's required to make self-service work. And this false edge or the back end is where there's this, you know, theme of where he's talking about the business leveraging self-service tools to answer their problems. And it is a balancing act that, like, you have to lead into a self-service solution with a strong BI team, I think, that understands the technology and at least has a process in place that shows business users in multiple different ways how to leverage the tool, the process that they have to follow. And I think there are prerequisites, like you talked about. Like, you have to have, if you're going to do self-service, it's not just data access, mm-hmm. right? Because they probably have some sort of data access now. If you don't have that, you need it.
You're probably starting with export to Excel, at least initially.
Yeah. Shape data for them so that it's like there's a centralized place where you're at least consolidating well-formed information for them to do their own analysis on. Mm-hmm. And then they have to, like, then you have to put in guardrails because you can't just open up system. And we're talking about it. We did, like, the load on production systems.
Yep.
Like, the very fact that opening up the doors on something without any guardrails or anything like means everybody's going to create their own version of the same report. You're going to have duplication all over the place. Yep. You're going to have one-off reports, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that's created and then not used again.
Going to have that.
So like all of it's
getting cleaned up. There's just stuff sitting everywhere.
So that's why I'm saying, like, do you need to go through like these extensive, really long? No, but you have to have an idea and somebody leading the effort to implement a successful self-service implementation and be aware of how you're going to deal with certain aspects of it, right? Like, but to your point, Mike, that's why it's always great to do it in stages or try it out with a group first or pick some users, you know, and you're going to run into challenges there. Yep. Tommy, back to our other point where what if you don't have them, right? There's a big need. Maybe the business intelligence team has to take on that group, right? And there are no analysts. And that's the reporting they get unless they can volunteer somebody to support that, right? Because if it's like, so there's so much nuance, I think, within here. And it's the balance of these two groups working together, swinging a sword, right, of reporting. And that's the uniqueness, I think, of a ton of our conversations around Power BI and Fabric now is the versatility of this weapon is crazy, right? If we had the sword in Power BI, now it's like the flaming power-up sword from Zelda whenever we're around danger, right? You know, like it starts glowing. Yeah, and we're all like, yeah!
It's doing even better now.
Now it's Fabric Green, right?
It's Fabric Green now. Exactly right. I like that analogy a lot. And I think that that bodes very well for what we're trying to accomplish. I think in general, like, again, as you were saying that, Seth, I literally had in my mind, we had this moment in time when we had Power BI Desktop, and you and I communicated this to users. We were saying, hey, did you know that the same tools you use to create Power Query is the same tool you can do the data engineering, you can build the Power Query, and you can literally hand it to the IT organization and say, here's my steps. I went from this step to this step, and you can click through and walk through. And Seth, I was a flabbergasted. I said, this is amazing. We now have a tool that has the same language. I'm not writing stored procedures. I'm not writing SQL statements. I'm building a Power Query M-based logic to say, here's how I transfer my data. Oh, and by the way, IT, here's what I did. You want to go build that in SQL? No problem. You have all the rules that I require to get to the answer. That's what I'm doing. And when you made that moment, I had this another epiphany, like, what if the same thing happens with Fabric? Like, what if the data engineering team is just like, hey, we're going to work hard to just land tables into the lake house. Oh, by the way, here's a default data set. Business, go explore and figure out what you think you need from that. Here's a little here's a little proof of concept. Here's a little mini project. Go discover and build what you want to build. Business comes in, mucks around with it for a little bit. Hey, I need some help. And this is just facilitating the conversation between the traditional IT and the business more, and you're having more conversions or conversations back and forth, and that's helping the situation.
Is it?
I think it's a good look. I have projects running right now where I'm working with the business and the engineering team to figure out what's the right pattern of where we land this data and when can we start looking at it, seeing it, because the IT organization doesn't know how to shape it for what we want to do in reports. They don't understand it yet. So we need stuff to play with to figure out what we're going to build in the semantic model layer, scale things out, make sure things are going to run well, we're not hitting up. So instead of hitting the actual production stuff, we can just flip over tables of data into our lakehouse, and we're using that as a way of experimenting and preparing things. And now we're having the conversations around, we know the big objectives, we know where we're headed, and now we can then build value-added tooling off of that data. Now, will we keep that final semantic model there? Will we keep the data engineering we built in Fabric in there permanently? Not sure yet, but at least we have the rules. At least we know what we built.
I don't know if that's self-service though, Mike.
How is it not?
So think about managed self-service, right? I'm not, especially in IPs, something Seth said too made me think, like, is managed self-service the best self-service or the only optimal self-service? And the reason why I'm questioning that is, you're talking about this workflow where everything that I'm working on is going to be handed off eventually, right? And I guess the question then is, in your model or the framework that you're talking about, how much does the business own? Because I think that's the big part of the self-service side. And if whether you're talking about the data lakes or lake houses in Fabric, but semantic models too, there's two sides of the coin with self-service. You have enterprise-led semantic models, and then you have business-led semantic models with their own credentials or their own, you know, what's certified, how far the reach is to the consumers, which is all part of self-service. Everything you're saying, which I can see working, because I think there's that workflow in managed self-service too, where we're handing off models. We need updates to these models that goes to enterprise.
Sure.
Right. But then, and I guess the worry there, and this is of in terms of how much do we know is taking place, what is the business then owning in that lake house? Are we giving them that much control? If they have full capacity to a lake house, when are they going to hand it off?
So here's a great, so you don't hand off things in a vacuum. I think there's also a very clear handshake that needs to be occurring between the business teams and the IT teams, right? So if the IT teams see the business abusing things and producing things that are not relevant, there's got to be a conversation. So the whole idea of this is more candid conversation between both teams. So let me change your analogy just slightly, Tommy, and give you my lens of how maybe I'm perceiving this, right? I think of there's multiple layers to PowerBI.com. You have apps and reports. That is kind of your consumption layer, right? If we're talking self-service, that by itself could be labeled as self-service. I will make you an app. I will put a handful of reports in. Here you go. Go look at the reports yourself. Change the filters. That is now quote unquote self-service. Then you can draw that line further upstream and say, well, maybe we're going to give a little bit more access to the business. Well, instead, now I give you access to the data model. So now you can have access to the data model, not the workspace. Now you have one layer deeper in this ecosystem. I'm going to go do analyze in Excel. I'm going to go build some reports potentially off of that. Now, in doing that, you've now changed the roles and responsibilities of who's responsible for what reports. For example, if the business comes into your semantic model and starts making really bad data, filtering things out, reporting out inaccurate information, when someone comes back and says, hey, this is really wrong, someone needs to get fired, you reported something incorrectly, who's responsible for that report? This is where before you hand that over, there is an expectation. Hey, we are going to control up to this level. We control up to the data set. We will guarantee that the data set is accurate. Anything that happens beyond that is the business. I'm not going to go the full analogy here, but you can continue back that onion deeper and deeper and deeper. And then I think you eventually wind up in someone's looking at the lake. There's a lake here and potentially even silver level lakes and not bronze or gold or gold level, which is, I think, more curated. But you could keep peeling that onion back. And if your data culture allows it, potentially you can give access to those deeper things. But the data culture requires process, expectation management, and a lot of other things that I think is part of the data culture. And I think that's where Matthew Roach is going here is if the data culture doesn't support these things, you shouldn't be going in and saying, here's a lake house, have fun.
Well, let me ask you one just pointed question there. Before you get to that layer of the lake house with that onion and before you get that smell, what is the number one concern you know organizations have when it comes to where you're at with semantic models and self-service? What's their number one concern from a high-level point of view?
So I think it slightly depends on who you're talking to. I think at the upper end levels of the organization, you have C-level people saying, am I spending the right amount of money and are my people happy with the data they're getting? So if they don't hear complaints around, ugh, Tommy is such a pain to work with. I can never get data from him. The systems are always locked down. If that kind of conversation is bubbling up to that leadership level, they're going to say, why am I spending so much money on whatever the BI tool is, and I'm still getting these complaints? So I think that the barometer for me, or the barometer I think for many organizations, is what is that feedback they're getting at that upper level? Now, conversely, where I find their success is, we start having people who really own the Power BI and start handing out apps and reports and start strategically giving access to data sets for people who can handle it. And what happens is the feedback now bubbles back up to leadership and says, this is working for me. I'm getting data faster and having more value from it, and I have more capability to shape it for what I need to do my job. When that feedback comes there, now that leader says, okay, we're spending money in the right places, either people or on the tooling, to let that business unit get their stuff done. So to me, that's where I would feel like the barometer should be sitting. I don't know if that answered your question at all, though.
No. I like the answer. But for me, the number one thing I hear across organizations, and I think it's more maybe where Seth's level is, role is.
Oh, Tommy's pulling you into this one, Seth. This is a two-dog fight, and Tommy's trying to like.
I feel it.
My buddy Seth will come help. He'll slug a couple. He'll get a couple punches.
Come around the neck.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done this for almost 300 episodes.
It's like I've been picking on Tommy the whole time, and all of a sudden, you know, Tommy's poking like Tom. Tommy wants his big, tall friend to come around the corner, and we're like, "Duke's up, buddy. Duke's up."
We've done enough of these conversations. We know who's going to be on which side. We know when we
can pick the fight. That's true.
Yeah. The number one thing I at least heard from where I think Seth's role is at, it's a concern, is if we're going to release self-service and we're going to start having this greater access, how do we control all these models and how do we control that the right data is getting out? That is the concern that I hear constantly. And I don't know if that is Seth's case, especially if they're releasing this more into the wild, where it's, hey, we're going to start doing the self-service, but how do we make sure that everything's at least not, I don't want to say controlled, but that they're not building things they shouldn't and they're doing the right things.
Well, I think that goes back to Mike's point that he made, which was there has to be clear communications and ownership of who owns what when those capabilities are given to the business.
Yeah.
On the same tack though, right? They're the responsibility of the people building the model certainly is that the model itself works as you would expect without error. If somebody adds to that or has the capability to muck with the data or reshape things and build reports, then the onus is on them. Like ultimately, like that's a data trust issue, right? Mm-hmm. But my assumption in that scenario is that like models are there, so there's a team that owns the models. Depending on the capabilities provided to the business user, ultimately the reports that they generate like are probably owned by them. To point back where you're obviously data quality and the accuracy of that data is extremely important.
Yeah.
But the scenarios that we're outlining here, depending on how you implement, cost is probably the biggest driver.
Yeah.
So I like where you're going with things, Tommy. And one thing that came to thought in my mind was you're asking about, are the KPIs right? Is the information correct? I think we have to decide who is going to say who is going to be the owner and responsible for defining what is right and making sure those are handled correctly in the report. And this is where I think the delegation of responsibility is really important here from a data culture standpoint is if you're going to give access to the business unit or those things, if there's not KPIs coming from a higher level in the organization, then they're allowed to make up their own KPIs or they are going to be responsible for their KPIs for their team, whatever those may be. If they have a problem with that or if someone at the leadership level has an issue with what KPIs are coming out from that team, then that's a culture change that needs to happen inside the leadership of that company. That leader needs to come in and say, no, these goals, these scores, these objectives that you're working on in your team aren't aligning with our greater business objectives. Really talking through the OKR framework, right? And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, right, there's going to have to be some major top level objectives that are going to have to be delivered, right? We're a manufacturing company. We want to ship things on time, under cost, blah, 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 whatever those things are, right? So there's going to be some sort of component around the expectations to the business around what they're going to be doing. So if those numbers go up, I don't really care what your KPIs are. If the main objectives get done, and we're making more money than we were before, and we're shipping more products than we were before, and we're bringing down costs, those are our big drivers of like what makes us a business, then we're good. So I think sometimes that leadership level has to have some strength behind them to say, what is really important? And if I didn't have to have 1,000 KPIs, what are the main ones that I care about? And so I think at that leadership level, they have to communicate down to the different departments, HR, shipping, operations, like who are those teams, and communicating to them and saying, okay, we need from your team, this is your set of requirements. Either you, I will help you build them, or you build them yourself and you report back out to me what those KPIs are. As the BI or central team is, I think that team is focusing a little bit more on, I'm gonna just source the data for you. Like I think there's the fabric space of things allows me to focus more on getting the data into the hands of the people that can actually make the KPIs and the decisions, and then giving them the responsibility to own that.
I love so much what you just said, because I think this is the biggest lack, or I think the thing that goes without consideration in a lot of organizations when they want to do self-service is, if you want a good data culture, there's an investment there from the business and from the organization, not just in the technology and the skill.
Correct.
That's where we focused on so far is, oh, well, people need to know how to make semantic models. Great. Yeah.
That's part of it, but it's not all of it.
Yeah, it's part of it. But the business needs to have to play a role in those KPIs and the metrics. Do we have a data steward? Do you have someone checking those numbers and validating that you have the correct logic? And there's a lot more investment there if the business is going to own it. Not the idea that you have the business owning the data. I think we always think, or I tend to think, there's a data analyst on that team, but it needs to be so much more. It needs to have that, again, the business having the validation and spending the time and the resources on not just a data analyst who can build models or reports, to your point, but also they're owning the KPIs and being more intimately part of that workflow. And I think that is where self-service becomes, to point, has a culture.
I think that is the linchpin, though, as we're discussing this, right? Yeah. Is, I don't want to be negative, but if we look at the large swath of organization, right, you have data providers on whatever level, business intelligence, enterprise, developer, BI developers, et cetera, analysts, people who are in charge of coming up with the numbers. The vast majority of people in an organization are data consumers, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't understand data, right? They could look at a spreadsheet and they can group things or filter things or do things to get an answer or pivot data. But if you ask them to like combine data sets,
no clue.
They would have no idea.
Tell me how you got to that number. Yeah.
No, they don't even.
It's even more fundamental than that. Point. Tommy. It's even more fundamental than that.
It's,
yeah.
So-and-so gave me 100 rows of data. That's my world. There isn't a question of, well, that's 98% out of 100% of all the things. And this is, you know, it's filtered down from a million based on the criteria that you gave me. Like, they don't care. It's the thing that's in front of them. And they will make a decision based on what you gave them quickly, because that's what the business is demanding of them.
I like that point.
So if that is the baseline, what really I think is the and baseline just meaning like the vast majority of people don't know how to work with data. And it's when we say self-service, I don't think we're talking about them. What I think we're talking about and a lot here is, to your point, Tommy, technology and process. But the glaring thing here is people. And it is extremely important, just as we talk about building reporting, building models, what are we trying to communicate or build? Like, it's all audience driven. So who is the audience for self-service? It's the data providers. What you're trying to do is accelerate into a business the uber technical resources that can do everything. They can connect all these data sources. They can build the models. They can massage. They can create facts and dimensions. They can create these enterprise systems that people plug into. Why? to extend the reach of those few into a much wider audience. But those that audience is still data providers.
Yeah.
And I think what's cool about the technologies that Microsoft has, and what's so fantastic and we love talking about all the time and brings up all this nuance of how do we become more effective at implementing these solutions in many different ways throughout an organization, is the fact that the capabilities are there. Technology way out in front now, and it's accessible, right? It wasn't before. Fabric breaks down how many doors within an organization.
Yep, exactly right.
Just by allowing all of this capability to someone with the permissions. Do we care who that someone is? No. It could be the analyst. The analyst could start to learn how to do the lake and could learn about OneLake and Spark and all these big things and Delta tables and bam, boom, light bulbs, big time things happening in the business because that individual had the capabilities put in front of them to make a big impact. And to me, if you talk about 5 years ago or 7 years ago, however many years ago it was that Power BI came out.
Good point.
My gosh, our excitement, right? Oh my goodness. There's nothing out there that can give us the data sources. Like we can plug all this stuff together and there's quick wins and we can bring insights so much faster. And now that's almost like table stakes.
Yeah.
Now we quickly move from like quick wins and all these like little things we can do to connect all these data sources. And now we're trying to figure out ways to talk to the business about, yeah, that's great, but let's take your 400 gig thing and just dump it in here and then make it accessible. And then we'll like add everything we want from your solution into the enterprise. Oh, and we don't even have to go anywhere. We just have to go to this other button here. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. But try to tell that to the data consumer.
No clue.
Right.
Not yet.
And they won't.
Yes.
So I think that's where, if I'm going to lean into an area of like, hey, what are we talking? Who are we talking to? Who do we need to engage in? And it's not a specific title. It's the subject matter expert. It's the person providing data for everyone else. And what we want to do is enable all those people because they at least have some idea how valuable data is. We want to extend their capabilities within the organization to make them more powerful and thereby bring everybody up along with them. Does that mean we're like totally ignoring the consumer? No, but that's in my world, that's a much larger kind of growth pattern. And you want to put guardrails around those people so they don't destroy your ecosystem.
The funniest thing about you said, and by the way, one of the best, I think, soliloquies you've ever done on the podcast, by the way.
Soliloquy? Yeah.
So I can't say words. But that ends with the data consumer going, is that number right? Did you check that in Excel? After all of that, I've seen that. We're like, we've done all these amazing things. Look how we've been able to transform data. Oh my gosh, the hours we saved. And then there's a report going, did you check that with Excel or did you check that with Tim? I don't know if that number is right. And then it goes right back. But
I think that's, I mean, I agree that may occur, but that just means we haven't done a good enough job explaining how we got to the answer and making sure that they understand where the data came from. So I think that gets resolved when we work on the process and work on the people and instill trust in what's going on. At some point in time, someone's got to have authority to say, this is the number, these are where they're coming out from. Yeah, people are not going to trust it initially. Sure, build that trust. And that's where the adoption roadmap comes into place. That's where we have these processes, these trainings, the skills. That's where we start talking about the people and the process pieces. And I think that's the part that really starts driving better adoption and more comfortable pieces with the business because we actually have the capability of bringing them in and teaching them, okay, here's how we're going to do things. This is the way things will work.
Yep.
Let's end. We're almost at an hour here. So let's just wrap it up here. Just a brief moment here. But before we go, I'm going to add one more comment from Matthew's bullet points from his video here. The comment I really resonated with me was a mature organization learns when to use self-service BI and when to use IT-driven approaches. It learns how to use them with a combination through effective processes and partnerships. And I feel like what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes has been about that. We need effective partnerships and processes. Those two things are not technology related. And I think that's why Matthew is so into this topic right now, because I would agree with him. Like, there's a lot of fluffy things that are happening around the space that are people and process related, and the technology doesn't necessarily address those directly. That's the part of the data culture piece that is why you read the Microsoft documentation. That's why you work time and take little steps to continue to educate and grow your people, because getting them more data savvy is going to have to be on your roadmap to make your business more competitive.
You know, it's almost as if you could spend like 300 hours talking about a lot of this area.
Yeah, it feels so. You should start back at episode one and start over. That is 100% true. So we are getting close. This is this is 301 episodes now, is what we're at right now. Yeah. So yep. you are now 300 hours deep into all the analytics and ramblings from the Explicit Measures podcast. So if nothing else, if you liked this episode, if you felt like this was good, valuable stuff, we've got 300 more of these you can go listen to. So.
We still don't know the
answer. Imagine the number of miles you could run in all that time. All right, let's do final thoughts and we'll give a wrap here. Tommy, final thoughts on this article, final thoughts around this data culture piece here.
Honestly, I'm going to tell users, just rewind about 5 minutes to what Seth said. I have nothing better to add. That was phenomenal. He's completely right. We have more access, and the ability for a single user going down the road can equip themselves and empower themselves more than ever before. So you know what I'm talking about? Just go back 5 minutes. Listen to Seth.
All right, Seth, what's your final words?
I've said what I said. I don't think there's anything to say anymore.
I said what I said, and I need to say no more. Awesome.
Thank you, Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, that's exactly where my head was.
Well, I do think this whole conversation wraps very well with our moniker and our saying. So from, what is it? Matthew, Michael's maxim is think like the business, act like IT. That will be my final statement there.
If you're not making money,
if this report doesn't make money, it better be saving it. If not, don't do it. Awesome. With that, thank you all very much. We appreciate your time. Thank you for listening to the podcast. This is a free thing. This is just out of our spare time. If you wouldn't mind, if you like this content, if this is helping you in your organization, if it's giving you some other things to think about, that's what we're here to do. We're helping you to weigh over what's happening in the Power BI ecosystem and think through all these other little fluffy areas. Power BI, the process and the procedure and the people, right? The process and the people. So those are the other areas here that we need to think through as a business. With that being said, thank you very much for listening. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
I just realized my own Puglia principles. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to powerbi.tips/podcast, leave your name and a great question. Finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips' social media channels.
Awesome. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.